Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Gamble on, fellas. Gamble on.
Welcome again to Gamble On, the weekly gambling podcast presented by USBets.com. I'm Eric Raskin, USBets Managing Editor and Media Director, and I'm joined by our senior analyst, Pulitzer Prize finalist, John Brennan. And I received my first ever bad beat payout on Wednesday, John. DraftKings was feeling bad about several of its big boosted bets of the day in a row losing. So on Tuesday, the sportsbook tried for a nearly sure thing, boosting a Giannis Antetokounmpo double-double from minus 500 odds to even money with a $25 max. I went in for the max, and he got injured in the third quarter, two rebounds shy of a double-double, clearly on his way to paying out if he hadn't gotten hurt. But DraftKings paid the bet as if it won, since they really were trying to lose this bet in the first place and give customers some free money. So now that I've personally experienced losing a bet and getting paid as if I won the bet, it feels a little bit empty, but having $50 in my account that I don't deserve is definitely better than not having that $50 in my account. John, any opinions on this bad beat payout? And did you happen to take part and wager, say, $5 on this one?
Well, Eric, I didn't notice it because I've been very busy working this week and somebody coughed and informed me about it. So
sorry.
No, I'm a little surprised at this one, actually. You know, clearly potential injury is part of the wager and players do get hurt. You look good on a Bryce Harper under homers preseason bet, right? Because you have noticed that because he has not missed many games in recent years, he gets banged up a lot and has power droughts. Now, this year he's missed 20 games in the first half. And the book doesn't get to say, hey, that's not fair. We assumed he'd play 150 plus games again.
Right.
You know, so I don't really get it. I'm still undefeated on these bets, by the way, over the years. And it's a big part why I've pretty much quadrupled my modest bankroll in that time. It's a good reminder, though, that it's true that the books really don't want you to lose every bet, because then you get frustrated and you quit. You whine and mule to your friends and family about it, and they don't sign up, and not good for anybody. And then it's a reminder, too, that apparently there aren't that many people as frugal as I am yet are willing to risk a little money at least. If there were more me's, either they wouldn't offer these lures or they'd be a lot more judicious about who gets them and who doesn't.
Yeah, you mentioned that you're undefeated in these. Yeah, there are the ones that they basically give you that can't lose, which this wasn't quite that, but it was inching toward that. I guess if they really wanted to just give everyone $25, they could have done one of those here, like make it Giannis over 0.5 points or something like that. But this was a case where they were clearly trying to give money away. It was a promo boost. And there was a legit bad beat, although you're right that injuries are a part of the game. He was on his way to hitting the double-double, clearly. So they probably would have pissed off a lot of customers if they hadn't done this one, which goes back to the dangers of the precedent they set with bad beat payouts. Now, they could have done a refund rather than grading it as a win, and I think people would have been okay with that. But as we've said many times, these companies love losing money for now in exchange for building customer loyalty. And on my end, that $50 will pay about 3% of what it costs to fix the busted air conditioning ducts in our new house. So I'll take it. Every little bit helps.
Yeah. But as I say, that is that reminder of why are they doing this? See, again, you got to think from their side of things. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we don't want you to lose all your money too quickly. And if you're struggling a little bit, and obviously, you know, there's a serious issue of the problem gambling we've talked about so many times and will again, but this is a separate thing. This is just, you know, person's very casual, but if they lose a little too much, they're just not going to be into it anymore. They don't want people to give up. So they're going to do these little things. I still think this is a weird one though.
Yeah, there's some weirdness to it, but as a beneficiary of it, I'm not going to complain. Thank you to everyone for joining us for episode number 149 of Gamble On. If you missed any of our previous 148 episodes, they're all available on Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you bet the under on Gamble On lasting 148 and a half episodes, sorry, no bad beat refunds.
Nice. And coming up a little later in the show, we'll be joined by New Jersey Assemblyman Ralph Caputo, a leading voice on gambling-related issues in the state. We'll get his takes on the legalization of esports betting and online casino cannibalizing Atlantic City or not. And we'll even get him to tell some personal stories about, yes, hanging out with Mickey Mantle. True stories. First, it's been, at least for me, if you check my recent publications, a busy week in the world of gambling. So let's get to it.
Here's your Gamble On News of the Week, an inside look at the biggest stories in the world of gambling.
Our colleagues at Sports Handle have published not one, not two, but three breaking news stories in the past 6 days on the hopes for Ohio sports betting legalization. We discussed Ohio with Jill Dorson last week. The casinos were not happy with the legislation. But then some political machinations got a new bill attached to an unrelated bill, this one more palatable to the casinos, and it passed the state Senate unanimously toward the end of the week. However, the House did not vote on it, and House Speaker Bob Kupp told the Cincinnati Inquirer that it would have to wait until after the summer break. So it seemed the news was pretty much all bad until Wednesday, when Kupp and Senator Kirk Schering both said that sports betting will be a top priority in the fall, and stopping short of a guarantee, they said they intended to get it passed in September. The wind keeps blowing back and forth in Ohio, and all we know for sure is that nothing is getting done before September. But John, do you see reason to believe this fall is when Ohio finally crosses the finish line?
I love the state. You know, maybe the bad news is the good news, Eric, sort of. By that, I mean, Ohio lawmakers don't seem to much care about sports betting. And maybe that's good because Lord knows there are at least 100 more pressing issues in the state, right? So, of course, this assumes that's how lawmakers are spending the time they don't spend on finishing off sports betting legalization. And, well, I'm not sure what else they're doing, frankly. So all I can say is I'm heading out to what they call Nickel G's in Chicago in about 10 days. That's the National Council of Legislators from Gaming States Conference. And the previous Nickel G's president was from Ohio, and they still don't have sports betting. I guess some states just can't have nice things.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're leaning toward a no for Ohio this year. Is that safe to say?
No.
Maybe more than leaning then, I guess. And yeah, I'm definitely leaning that way. And to me, the big reason to predict this fails is just inertia and previous history. It's failed every time so far. Ohio keeps tripping over its own feet on this. It makes sense to predict failure again, because you can only be wrong predicting that once, whereas you can be wrong many times in predicting it passes. Now, a politician telling you something will happen in September, with all due respect to our upcoming guest, Mr. Caputo, a politician saying that doesn't mean a whole lot to me. And the way the bill was attached to an unrelated bill, as we learned with the UIGEA many years ago, that stuff can be very effective when it happens quickly at the 11th hour. But I feel like because it didn't get done immediately, once you go on recess and everyone has time to process the machinations, it gets a lot harder to sneak one by. So I'd say I'm something like 65-35 that Ohio doesn't get it done in 2021. But that said, I do believe it will happen soon. It won't be too much longer because, you know, New York will be up and running in 2022. There will be big numbers coming out of that state once it gets up and running. I do believe that after that, a lot of these fence sitter states will get tipped toward passing sports betting bills.
Well, this is what I liked about Arizona, what I don't like about Florida, which is that you figure out who are the power players in your state, and it's not the same in every state. Horse racing is not involved everywhere. Tribal casinos not involved everywhere. Sports teams are not involved everywhere. So, you know, arenas, stadiums, all these different potential power brokers in your state, figure out who they are. Everybody, you know, wets their beak, as I like to say, and then it passes. Arizona's sailing through. Florida, I'm waiting for the lawsuits. And Ohio, clearly, they were going to kick the casinos out, which is insane in terms of politics and lobbying. So, of course, right. That didn't happen. And then they got it going forward. But then somebody else presumably decided they weren't getting enough. So I don't like the way this is going there. And I don't know that it's going to happen in September. And I agree with you, though, that I mean, next year it's going to be harder and harder for any state to not do this. You know, we take the Utah, Hawaii exceptions. We don't know right. They're ever going to do any of this. But other than that, I don't know how many states are going to be able to hold back. You know, like you say, New York presumably has some mobile sports betting, massive numbers. Texas and California are rumbling, and Florida, who knows? But yeah, it's going to happen eventually for these states. But I feel bad for the locals, you know, who just they don't want to bet illegally. They don't want to go to the corner bookmaker. They don't want to bet online on some offshore account. But they just want to throw a little money down on their team and watch the game. And it's just the whim of the legislatures in each state. You know, you can do it, and your cousin or your brother-in-law, whatever, in a different state, he can do it. It makes no sense, but it is what it is.
Well, you mentioned the Utah-Hawaii exception. That it just jogged my memory that earlier this week I was listening to the Get a Grip podcast produced by our friends at Sports Handle, and David Purdom was on this week, and they talked about that there are two states that have not introduced any sports betting legislation at all, and my immediate thought was Utah and Hawaii, but it's actually not. I had forgotten something was introduced in Hawaii, even if it's not going to be taken seriously. Do you know what the other state is besides Utah that has not introduced any legislation?
Want to say one of the Dakotas. I'm giving myself two outs.
You're in the right general vicinity. It's Wisconsin, which I didn't realize. So I don't know if we have to start thinking of them as a Utah, Hawaii, and Wisconsin as the three states that might never do this. I don't know.
Yeah, got Green Bay Packers, Milwaukee Bucks. That's a great. I mean, I've been to Milwaukee dozens of times. That's a great sports state. I mean, the fans are into it. The games are lively. I mean, the Brewers too. I've been to Miller Park, not my favorite park, but the fans are great. And I'm surprised at that one.
All right. Well, we'll see if perhaps something will be introduced at some point there. For our next story, smoke them if you got them, John, or maybe don't. It depends where you are. There have been longstanding debates in numerous states about whether smoking should be allowed in casinos. And during the masks required phase of COVID, both of our home states, Pennsylvania and New Jersey, banned smoking in casinos. But now that the masks are off, the cigarettes are back. On Monday, Pennsylvania lifted its smoking ban in casinos, returning to the rule of smoking being allowed on up to 50% of the casino floor. And in New Jersey, Governor Murphy was slower to act, but he did acknowledge at a press conference Wednesday that with the state's smoking ban due to sunset this coming Sunday, July 4th, he will not interfere with it. So smoking is coming back to the Atlantic City casinos on Sunday, although the New Jersey law is that only 25% of the gaming floor can permit smoking. John, this is a contentious issue. Some expected or hoped that post-COVID smoking in casinos would never come back. Others insist it's vital for business to draw in customers who want to smoke. So what do you make of the decisions in Pennsylvania and New Jersey? And if smoking bans aren't happening now following the temporary ban due to COVID, can we assume smoke-free casinos are not going to become a reality anytime soon?
Yeah, I mean, my follow-up story on this issue likely is posted on njonlinegambling.com by now, I think, by the time people hear this. Okay, but spoiler alert for those who haven't yet read it, I'm going to go into some of that. Now, if I'm just focused on what is likely to happen in New Jersey, which, you know, very fairly is mainly what readers want me to know, what's going to happen? For more than a decade, I've gone by the very simple rule. Is State Senate President Stephen Sweeney a co-sponsor of the bill? Easy flow chart, right? Yes, the bill passes, although it's not 100% locked to be signed by the governor, but it's going to pass. No, then the bill never even gets a committee hearing. That's just how it works in New Jersey, period, end stop. Now, what do I think should happen? Well, you know, keep in mind, as you mentioned, 50% of Pennsylvania casino floor must be smoke-free. Atlantic City mandates 75% smoke-free. And casinos have spent millions on improving HVAC systems to give COVID-phobic people, you know, okay, that's all of us, I assume, right? Who isn't COVID-phobic? less fear about entering a casino in this era. That has to help with smoke as well. Although it's easy for me to say I'm not a pregnant woman who works the casino floor full time, right? So, now, personally, I never notice things like smoke unless it's really oppressive. But I also have people close to me who I swear have bloodhound in their lineage. They can sense smoke from a block away. So, you know, the experience varies for different people. So it's hard to say that. I would conclude that in an ideal world, there are smoking and non-smoking casinos. And the smokers and the dealers who love them can be in one place and the opposite, they land in the other place.
Yeah, that would be something that makes sense on a lot of levels if everybody succeeds from a business perspective doing it that way. But I think there are issues with that. Just on a personal level, I don't totally get in 2021 why smoking cigarettes is still such a big thing. We're several generations into the era of everyone knowing cigarettes are bad for you, and I feel like the notion of smoking cigarettes making you quote unquote cool is long gone. So it just seems odd to me that any kid in the last 30 years or so would even try a cigarette. There are better ways to rebel nowadays. That said, cigarette smoking is still a thing, whether I get it or not. And it and drinking go hand in hand with gambling for a lot of people. And even though this was a decade ago, the Revel example does suggest the customers you lose by banning smoking, that's a costly number. But you brought up a key thing that's changed is that, you know, the ventilation systems are good and only got better during COVID, plus the ceilings in the casinos are way up high. I feel like if you walk through a casino, as long as you aren't like walking right through a crowd of smokers, I find that it doesn't stink that bad. You know, if you're in like a small enclosed space with a smoker, that I can find intolerable. But casinos, it doesn't bother me much. As long as there are large areas of the casino that are non-smoking, I, as a non-smoker, won't complain too loudly. But I do feel bad for the casino employees, particularly the pregnant ones that you mentioned, who can't necessarily choose where in the casino they're situated.
Yeah, I mean, I know some young people who do smoke, and, you know, the very fact that it's seen as something that people definitely should not do is exactly the appeal still. You know, it's like the more known about the dangers of it, the more rebellious it feels, I think, to do it anyway. Because first of all, you're young and you think you're invincible, and you kind of are in some ways. So I get that. But I just wish, you know, the Revel problem to me, and I was there for its opening in 2012 and for its closing in 2014. But, you know, it's one thing to have a smoke-free casino, the first one in Atlantic City. They didn't market it that way, right? So nobody knew, including me, that this was happening. So the typical gamblers show up and they're all psyched and they find out, wait a minute, I can't smoke here. Well, the hell with this, I'm going elsewhere. They didn't market to people who want to go to a casino that's smoke-free. And there's plenty of gamblers that feel that way. I don't know what would happen if there was a really big marketing campaign. I'm talking TV ads, radio ads, New York market, Philadelphia market, really pushing like, listen, you know, if you smoke, that's great. You know, you go somewhere else. Here, we want you, the gambler who doesn't smoke, to come here. I'm not convinced that would fail. I mean, easy for me. I'm not risking hundreds of millions of dollars, but right. I still think that it's a possibility, especially nowadays. Like you said, I think it's down to like 14% of people smoke or something. It's a pretty small number now. And again, gamblers obviously are going to be more than 14%. But I wish some casino would roll the dice, so to speak, right, and take a shot and say, that's right, we're smoke-free. We're bragging about it. We're telling you, hey, you know, maybe this will help you. You don't want to smoke anymore, but you do it when you gamble. But if you come here, you can't do it. Maybe that's good for them. But more importantly, that group, I think, that likes to gamble, does not like smoke, this is their casino. They're going to be completely loyal to that one. I'd like to think it can work.
That's a good insight about it not being marketed that way. I didn't realize that they failed to really let people know. Because I mean, I'm thinking of the downtown Vegas casino that, and actually then there were two casinos that came back from COVID with the adults only, no families. And I think that's one of those things where, yes, you're cutting out a certain sliver of your potential audience, but when you're in an area with tons of casino options, and Atlantic City with 9 is, I think, close enough for one to try it, that you can have success by, you know, cutting out whatever it is. 14% of people are not interested in going to your casino, but the other 86%, it just got that much more appealing. You're right. It'd be interesting to see somebody in Atlantic City try it, and whether it can succeed, or somebody in Vegas, you know, to do a full smoke-free casino with how many casinos there are out there. If the adults only thing certainly seemed to have some strong appeal. So maybe the no smoking casino could have strong appeal too.
Well, I mean, look at Southwest Airlines. They really, you know, kind of were rebellious. They decided that customer service and not having an incredible amount of annoying and unexpected fees thrown at a person might actually get them some customers. And they're doing pretty well. I mean, it's kind of strange in the airline industry to have a good customer service, but they seem to do it. And I've flown on them often enough. Listen, it's not the greatest experience you've ever had, but if you're trying to, you know, save a buck and not be just battered by these annoying fees, they do the job pretty quickly.
Yeah, they're the one without the assigned seating, right? Southwest. Yeah. Yes, that's the one drawback is that you're in a race to get there early and line up and all that stuff, which adds a little to it. But if you're saving money, yep, might be worth it. All right, we've gotten a little bit off track. Let's get back to gambling. Our third story this week is something a little bit different. We've gotten used to mobile sports books with casino branding like BetMGM and Caesars, or with DFS branding, DraftKings, FanDuel. Now, starting in Colorado, there will be a Sports Illustrated branded sports book powered by 888. It's expected to launch sometime later this year. This isn't a first of its kind thing, as Barstool is a media entity that has a branded sports book. Still, it's interesting in that SI was synonymous with sports media for many decades, but has faded from prominence. And I wonder if the SI brand means much to people, say, age 30 and under. So what do you think, John? Is a Sports Illustrated sports book a good business strategy in 2021? And will bigger brands follow? Namely, do you see ESPN having its own sports book before long?
Oh, I do see ESPN having its own sports book soon enough. And I think it would do quite well in winning over fans of their brand who don't gamble now and don't play fantasy sports. And believe it or not, there are such people out there. That's a decent niche there. And I think they would do great. I mean, they have a lot of big fans of theirs. I mean, us cynics in the media and stuff can mock ESPN all we want, but they have a huge following base. Mm-hmm. And I think they trust the brand, and they don't, again, they're FanDuel, DraftKings. It's not something they're into. They don't go to casinos necessarily. But they love sports. And if ESPN eases them in and says, hey, you know, it's easy to bet, you know, it's not a big deal, I think they do great. Now, Sports Illustrated, you know, it's not the only traditional media name out there that basically exists now on a zombie level. And I will mention two others I'm thinking of because, you know, lawyers and everything. But now I've always believed that if
I'll find out off air which two you're thinking.
Yeah, you go. Exactly. I always believed that if Notre Dame ever went through a dry spell in football, I'm thinking back decades now, the whole house of cards could collapse because it's a religious institution in Northern Indiana, and a 14-year-old hot prospect who hasn't seen Notre Dame in a big bowl in, say, 5 years is liable to write them off completely if they don't get there in a subsequent year or two. You know, the Fighting Irish, don't get my Irish up in that annoying nickname, but, you know, they've held the line, but not by a lot. So they're teetering. But I think once the mystique rubs off, look, Miami is Miami. I mean, you know, the U is not what it used to be. I've been to Miami plenty of times. I was there, South Beach, many times in my youth. That is that's not tired. The new 17-year-old, that's saying, yeah, you know, I don't know about this crowd. It's okay, I guess. Compared to Northern Indiana, no offense. So Sports Illustrated, my point is, it's in the same boat potentially as Notre Dame. And, well, I don't see a lot of five-star recruits coming aboard anymore there. So that would have been my dream gig in the 1980s, and I have a rejection form letter somewhere around here to prove it. but I do think there's room for a sports book with a name cachet that appeals to everyone from like youngish baby boomers to relatively elderly millennials. Maybe they can have exclusive betting on who will be in the cover of the next swimsuit issue. Wait, do they even still have a swimsuit issue?
That's a great question. I honestly don't even know the answer.
that's scary that neither one of us know. And I think it says more about them than us, but maybe it says something about us too.
Maybe a little of both. A little from column A, a little from column B. I will say about Notre Dame that as long as the movie Rudy remains in heavy rotation on cable, I guess Notre Dame won't totally fade from prominence. But I feel like it's been at least a decade since I saw anyone refer to SI as a serious authority, as an example of prestige journalism. Yeah. I can't remember the last time I saw a print edition of it anywhere. Not to take away from some of the fine writers they still have, but SI did not adapt to the digital age as quickly and effectively as ESPN did, and certainly didn't throw anywhere near as much money at their web presence. The name just doesn't mean that much anymore. I don't see an SI branded book doing even as well as a Barstool branded book. And even the Barstool branded books have had sort of middle of the road results so far. I don't know, but I am totally with you on ESPN. It's coming 100% guarantee. I don't know when, but there will be an ESPN sports book eventually. And Stephen A. Smith will be screaming at us in commercials about who and what to bet on. And we will all hate it and regret the Supreme Court ever ruling on PASPA once we get to that phase.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever mentioned it, but I knew Stephen A. before he was Stephen A. 30 yeah. years ago. He was covering the 76ers for one of the Philadelphia papers, and he was not a loud guy. He was just a regular guy. I liked him well enough, and I don't know. I think agent, yada, yada, yada. And here we go. Hey, he's making millions of dollars. So good
for him. He is. Yeah. Well, having grown up in Philadelphia, I did see his, I knew his byline before and saw him on the local stations occasionally before he went national. It was the Inquirer that he wrote for. And my theory on Stephen A. is everyone go on YouTube and look up Saturday Night Live skits that Chris Rock did a character, Nat X. Look it up and tell me that Stephen A. Smith didn't watch that and just completely steal the character and build a one-man media empire out of it. But I find him annoying as hell and utterly unwatchable, and I change the channel the second I see he's on, but I give him all the credit in the world for somehow having success with what he does. He's having enormous success and becomes the face of ESPN, and I dread the potential commercials for sports books with Stephen A. Featured in them.
Yeah, but it's free enterprise, right? We don't get it, but it works. And if it didn't work, he wouldn't be. He's earning the money that he gets. Let's put it that way. He's getting eyeballs. He's getting viewers. He's getting everything. And so, ESPN makes a ton of money off him. He deserves a big chunk of that slice. So, like I said, it's free enterprise.
Yep.
It's time to welcome a special guest from the world of gambling. Let's get to the Gamble On interview.
Our guest this week is a man who appeared on Gamble On for the first time in February of last year, and at the end of the interview, we told him we hoped the gap between his first and second Gamble On appearances would be shorter than the gap between his tenures in the New Jersey State Assembly. That gap was 36 years, so indeed, we've beaten it. He's an Essex County Democrat who served in the Assembly from 1968 to 72, took a little time off to make a living as an Atlantic City casino executive, and returned to the Assembly in 2008. He has been a leading voice on a number of fronts in Trenton ever since, including on all bills gambling related, it seems. Assemblyman Ralph Caputo, welcome back to Gamble On.
Thank you very much. And it just goes to show you can't get away from your past. How I ended up in the gaming committee and chairman, I have no idea. Trying to run away from it, and here I am back in the
right. It feels very Michael Corleone. I try to get out, they keep pulling me back in.
Similar, you know.
So before we get into current events in New Jersey gambling, let's start the interview with some storytelling about Mickey Mantle. Even those Gamble On listeners or hosts too young to remember Mantle as a baseball player or his tenure as a greeter at an Atlantic City casino are probably familiar with the fact that he was banned from baseball due to the latter job before being reinstated 2 years later. Assemblyman Caputo is more familiar than just about anybody with the Mantle saga. So Mr. Caputo, I know you told John off air that this could be its own entire podcast, but trying for the abridged version in maybe 3 minutes or so, what is your connection to the Mantle controversy in Atlantic City?
Well, we worked together in Atlantic City. We were both at the Claridge Hotel and Casino back in the early 80s. I think Mickey was there before me. I think I was around 83, I entered. He might've been there a little earlier. Willie Mays was across the street at Bally's. So the both of them served as casino marketing tools, actually. They went out, they were big draws. Mickey was a huge draw and got even more intense as time went on. My connection with him was crazy because he comes to me one day and he says, listen, Ralph, you know, I want to get out of here. I really don't want to do this anymore. I said, well, I'm not your boss. I said, you're going to have to talk to the president of the hotel. I said, he said, fine. He said, I owe them time, but then I don't want to rehook up. I want too much money from them anyway. They'll refuse it. So he goes up and asks for $1 million. And of course they said, Mickey, we can't afford to pay you $1 million. He says, well, I don't want to be here anymore. So he had like, I don't know, 15 or 20 dates that he owed them over the next year or so, over a year, probably maybe about a year. So he goes and tells them, he says, listen, Caputo will take those dates. What a nightmare that was. So they call me upstairs. They said, did you tell Mickey that? I said, listen, he doesn't want to be here. Why would you want to keep a man on a job that doesn't want, but he's honorable. He wants to complete his obligation. So if I can help, I didn't realize what I was getting into. If I can help, I will. I say, he's a great guy. He's an icon. We grew up knowing Mickey Mantle. The world knows Mickey Mantle. And he's a big asset to the company. So I'll do whatever I can. Fine. You got him in your hands for the next 6 to 9 months. Well, that was a trip into, unbelievable. It was crazy, but he was a great golfer. And I used to take him to all these golf clubs, the country clubs up in North Jersey. Everybody got to know him. And when we did big events where crowds of people came, it started to get really crazy. It was Joe DiMaggio and him were the only two really icons left alive. So if you went to a crowd, let's say hypothetically, the first crowd would be 300. If you went to another event, it would be 1,000. And then it would get into the thousands. I mean, and he was bewildered by it. He said, I can't understand it. I said, well, they're not here for me, Mickey. They don't know me. They're here for you, you know? And he handled it well. I mean, he had, you know, as you know, he had some demons that he constantly lived with on a daily basis. And he was tough to manage, but a very good guy. And I have a lot of good memories with him. And we made a lot of friends in North Jersey, which I'm from. And people got to, in fact, we invited him to some very personal things that people had fundraisers for hemophiliacs or whatever. He was so willing to go along with it because he had sickness in his own family, himself, his son and whatever. And he was very, very humane about all of this and wanted to help. He was a great golfer, even with his bad legs. I mean, he could hit that ball. Anybody want to gamble and think they could beat him, they lost every time. Other than that, you know, I was with him the last day he was on the payroll with the casino. And I took him to a restaurant up in Randolph, New Jersey. It was raining like crazy. He jumped out of the car. You know, it was a little nuts. But he got in and he says to me, listen, Ralph, I appreciate what you've done. He gave me his card. He said, I'm going to open this restaurant in New York called Mantle's. He said, I said, really? I said, I'm going to be in that business and probably do some commercials, which he really didn't do. He didn't do many commercials prior to that. He did a couple, one for Pepsi but Gillette or something like that. But he could have made hundreds and hundreds of thousands. For some reason, he wasn't interested. So that was the last time I saw him. And he said, you can get in touch with me, call Texas. My son will answer the phone. He didn't even have an agent. Mickey Mantle didn't have an agent. Wow. You believe this? I mean, didn't have an agent. It was crazy. I just tell him, he didn't make much money. His pension was nothing huge. I think his highest salary was $100,000, which is ridiculous. No bitterness at all about it. Never beefed or whined about that. He was really not a materialistic guy. He loved people and he loved them. Party, love to be out there. You know, he had a drinking problem. We understand that. But other than that, you know, I have nothing but fond memories of him. And I could, you know, after a while, it was just like an equal. We would just talk to each other, you know, like I would talk to anybody else. I mean, I knew it was Mickey Mantle. One last story about him.
Yeah.
We had a dedicated field in Old Bridge, New Jersey. He said, I don't want to do it, blah, blah, blah. You know, he always complained. I said, listen, this guy's a huge customer for the casino. He's going to donate a field in his mother's name. Why don't we do it? We'll get Sparky Lyle. The three of us will go. All right, get a convertible. Well, I forget how we get together, but we ride into Old Bridge. Now, this is the, you got to picture this. When I tell you, and I'm not exaggerating, that'd be 100,000 people there, three or four deep, grandsons, fathers, grandfathers, lined up along this road going into Old Bridge. He said, what is this? I said, that's you. He was coming into his own then in terms of being hugely popular. And we got to the field, he did it. He didn't even complain. He even wanted to go to the luncheon and he signed autographs. And it was a great day. I mean, it was really a great day. And I think that changed him because he saw really the admiration and love people had for him. And I knew he wanted to go on after that, but that's my Mickey Mantle story. It was a trip. I didn't even, he got angry at me because I never asked him for an autograph. He was like, everybody's driving you nuts. We had a picture together and he signed it and I have it, but he said, I can't understand you. Why, you know, these balls are going to be worth tons of money. I think I got one for my son. And that was it. But I never abused that privilege of being around him because everybody wanted his signature. You know, that was crazy. Right. So that's about it, unless you want to ask me other questions about him.
No, we should probably move on. But those are great stories. And whenever the next time we have you on the podcast, I think the road we'll want to go down is specifically Mickey Mantle gambling on the golf course stories. Those sound like fun to save for the next time.
There's lots of them. There's lots of stories. But anyway, I want to keep it clean. I don't want to get sued.
Yeah. Anyway, well, okay. I'll tell you that in the early 1990s, I was covering the New York Rangers hockey team, and I did a between periods radio interview, which was a big thrill for me anyway. And at the end, they told me I won dinner for two at Mickey Mantle's restaurant, as you're talking about. And that was even a bigger deal because, you know, I went there a number of times, and it was a little bit of a tourist trap, but still the name itself was such a big deal. But I just want to switch to another topic that's dear to your heart, and that's esports. You know, it's sort of well known, I guess, that in New Jersey, there have been esports tournaments that you can gamble on legally through the Division of Gaming Enforcement. But a bill just passed, and I guess the governor is about to sign into law about esports. So what's the difference between already being able to bet on it in New Jersey and what's going to happen now? And what are your overall hopes for the esports industry and New Jersey?
Well, you know, just to put it bluntly, it's the next big thing. It's going to be huge. I mean, the millennials are betting on this all over the world. Okay, they're bringing billions of dollars worth of economic activity to this event. New Jersey had a pilot. They really didn't have a law. The DG did a temporary thing on a tournament. Well, now it's going to be codified. You know, we've been working on this bill, this silly bill that been laying around. You know what goes on, John? It took about a year or more to get this approved. I think what happened, I think Atlantic City elected officials in the legislature thought it was a threat. And once they understood that this is a positive thing for Atlantic City because they have the infrastructure to handle these type of events, they can bring thousands of people into the city for these events, which they can be, you know, the state can benefit because they'll be taking bets on it. But the economic activity in terms of hotel rooms, restaurants, all of the tax revenue that you receive just from the shot in the arm from this thing, this is a big, big deal. I mean, I didn't know much about it, to tell you the truth, but once I started to see how these young people are so involved in this, now, of course, we're not going to let anybody under 18 years old participate, and the DG is going to regulate this and make sure that no tournament's going to be approved unless they pass the muster with the Reebok and the Division of Gaming. So it's a new thing. We're going to be way ahead of the curve here. I think it's going to be a big jolt in the arm. And everybody understands that the casino industry has been under a tremendous amount of pressure over the years. And this can be one additional thing that we didn't have. That's happening anyway. It's always that excuse, just like marijuana. Right. You smoke it anyway, right? Which I didn't vote for any of that stuff. But the point is, it's occurring. The base is there. Now that we have pinpointed this as an activity that's legitimate in New Jersey. I think the governor will sign it. We work with the attorney general on this. Many sessions with Steve Finkel from the attorney general's office. So I don't see any problem. I think the governor will sign it. They're going to be a subject to the same tax rate that any other gaming activity has in the state of New Jersey. If it's online and they bet it online, it's going to be up to 14%. If they do it at a tournament and they're in a brick and mortar place, it'll be more like close to 10%, you know, something around that. But I don't know how much revenue they're going to get. I think because it's only limited to a $500 maximum bet, I believe. But the fact is the activity that it's going to bring to the city and to the state of New Jersey, they could go to the Proof Center, they can go to the PAC, they can go to venues up here too. But Atlantic City is really tailor-made for this stuff, tailor-made.
Maybe and I understand that this clarifies that the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest coming up, that'll be wagered on again in New Jersey.
Probably. You know, I mean, they do anything there. They bet on the Academy Awards, I mean, but who knew? So this I think, is more genuine, more authentic to what's relevant at this point. So that's why I pushed it. And I'm glad Senator Beach moved it in the Senate. And hopefully the governor will sign it soon.
So you said we don't know quite how much revenue that will produce. One thing that we know is producing major revenue is online casino. And online casino gaming first came to New Jersey and Delaware in 2013 over objections by some in the Atlantic City casino industry. I'm curious, did you share those concerns at the time?
Yeah, I did. Originally, I did not favor it for a number of reasons. One, I don't believe it, even now it passes the constitutional requirement. I mean, you change, according to the Constitution, you have to have a voter approval for a change in gaming, okay? This was a major change going on the internet, et cetera. But what happened, Senator Lesniak, very, very crafty, very smart. He brought in constitutional lawyers to testify and people bought it, you know? That was one reason. And the other reason I was against it originally was the fact of the licensing. You know, we're talking about people from all over the world, companies from all over the Isle of Man, everywhere else, plugging into the state of New Jersey. And you know, when the state needs money, they'll look the other way, right? You know, that's what happens. So I had been through the experience and other people with me, a very stringent licensing requirements to work in the casino industry. And I was concerned about that. And I did not like the response I got from some of the people that were pushing internet gaming. I said, we're in the state of New Jersey and here we're going to have to comply whatever those rules are. That was a problem. And Christie had his reasons also. At first he was against it. And I think it was the constitutional question and maybe something else. I can't remember, but I know he vetoed it. And then for some reason, it came back to us with the convincing arm of Senator Lesniak, who's bringing it and convincing people to do things that it was done. Now, it turned out to be a big asset for the state because the revenue was huge. In the beginning, it was very disappointing. Christie overestimated the revenue projections, but as John and I talked about, it's up there. And the other reason why I was concerned, I thought that jobs would be at stake because as you saw, casinos closed in Atlantic City. So people were not going, they're not going to go there if they can bet on the internet. You're going to lose waiters, bartenders, dealers, people that work in restaurants, hotel, bellhops, gaming people, marketing people. So all these casinos were under a threat because of the competition from other destinations. And I thought we'd have less visitors to Atlantic City with the internet gaming. That was another reason why I was worrying about the health of the existing casinos, all right? The reason why they're doing well now, we have less casinos, number one, than we did. And two, the pandemic. People are home betting on their internet. They're out of work, or if they're not out of work, they're betting in between their Zoom calls or whatever. And this is part of the devastation of the COVID pandemic we've been through. So I don't know if this is permanent. I don't know. I can't have a crystal ball, but I do know it has increased because of that. People being at home and betting online. So that's part of the reason why the jury's still out of how it has kept the lights on in Atlantic City, mm-hmm. sports betting and online gaming. But you know, they're up against it there. I don't care what they say about their profitability when they're measuring against years that they didn't do well at all. It's just, it's some are going to do very well.
But so the concerns you had about online casino cannibalizing the revenue for in-person casinos, have you changed your tune on that now having seen it for a while, or you think it's still sort of a temporary pandemic thing and they are still cutting into
some degree? We're going to see, you know, the casino business is a very, very immediate business. It's a month-to-month situation. I was in it for over 20 years. What was yesterday doesn't mean it's going to happen today. Conditions change. If people start to come out more, you'll have more visitors. Hopefully the casinos will be healthier and internet gaming may not be as healthy. I don't know. We're going to have to see that. I'm not sure. So it's a shame. It's just a funny business. It's a tough business. It really is. Competition is tough. And now they're competing with each other because you have online stuff. Why would I walk into Atlantic City to do a sports bet if I could do it online? Why would I drive down there? For what reason? That's my point. Now, it could get better if the economy gets better and people get back to work. But people don't want to go back to work now. So where's this disposable income going to come from? I don't know what the future is. Maybe we'll end up with four or five casinos in Atlantic City rather than nine.
Assemblyman, I want to ask you about one other thing. You've gotten so many bills passed over the years on gambling and gambling expansion and other issues, and I guess there's still more to do, because I know there's one a topic also dear to your heart, which is having a gambling diversion court. I think people are familiar with the idea that in many cases some first-time nonviolent offenders can who have drug or alcohol problems can get kind of a little bit better treatment than pure punishment. And it sounds like you're trying to have that expanded to people with gambling issues too. Can you talk about the bill and where it might happen and when it might happen on that?
We have a bill in, it was late in the session, myself, Dan Benson, and Anthony Varelli from Mercer County, to create a gambling treatment diversion court program like they have in Las Vegas, okay? That's how I discovered it. I read about it. I didn't know that it even existed. And we started to talk about it, and we sponsored a bill. We've changed the bill somewhat because of the negotiations with Benson. He's very, very in tune with this, and we're working together on it. But it makes sense. You know, people that have gambling addictions, and now you're going to see more of it because of the pandemic. And if they commit minor crimes, there should be something established in three pilot courts in the state, North, Middle, and South, where instead of incarcerating someone, if the crime is not murder or violent crime or, you know, some high type of criminal activity, that they could go into a treatment. And if they follow the treatment and they stay with the program, then the sentencing would be set aside. So it's something we're going to get into. We're listening to some people that have done this in other states. They established it out in Nevada. And we're going to try to do something here. And hopefully we're going to get something either in lame duck, if not. And you know, John, how long these things take. You know, we could talk about them. I mean, look at esports. Was that a big no? Was that a complicated thing? How long did it take? Over a year, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is going to meet with some resistance, I'm sure. And we're gonna concentrate on it and see if we can get it done. Absolutely. I think it's worthwhile. We all know gamblers. We all know they're not all criminals. We know that they've done some stupid things. And we don't want to – incarceration is not the answer.
All right. Good good range of topics we covered there. We thank you for your time, Assemblyman Caputo. And we will definitely have to have you back on to get some more of those Mickey Mantle stories, especially the golf gambling ones.
The mixer. The mixer. I'll bring my picture and show it to you next time.
Okay. We look forward to that.
With his signature. Imagine. Me with Mickey Mantle, the kid from North New Jersey. All right.
Not bad. Not bad.
Two men. $10,000. Will they run it up or blow it all? It's time to check in on the Gamble On Bankroll.
We had some wins and some losses last week, but the wins outnumbered the losses, and we are back to being down by mere triple digits instead of needing a comma to express how big a hole we're in. John, you split your two Thursday baseball bets, losing $50 on the Cards, but winning $45 on the Nats. Your only other bet was a minor loss of $20 on Paul Casey to win the Travelers Championship. That long shot didn't pan out. I had two NBA futures that haven't come in yet. Hawks in seven, which holds promise, and Phoenix to win the title, which went from plus 110 when I bet it to about minus 200 now that they're in the finals and probably facing an inferior opponent with injury issues. So we wait on those. But my three boxing bets are complete, and two of the three were winners. I had $50 on Lomachenko by decision. He scored a knockout, so that's a loss. But I had Gervonta Davis, Mario Barrios to go over 8.5 rounds, and it did, winning us $80. And I had a 6-1 payout on Davis by KO between rounds 10 and 12, and he ended it in the 11th, winning us $90 on a $15 bet. So all in all, for the week, we won $95. And we are now down by $939. We also have $1,387 on hold in futures bets. So that leaves us with $7,674 available to bet with this week. And I'm up first, and I'm a little hesitant to pick a side in tonight's Bucks-Hawks game five. So I'll pick a player prop. We figure Giannis is not going to play. That means bigger stats for other Bucks players. But I think they inflated Chris Middleton's points line a bit too much. The line is 27.5 points, a number he's exceeded in only 3 of 15 playoff games so far. He does have the occasional huge game. So if he beats this number, he might beat it by a lot. He might go off for 40 or something. That's fine. I think about 7 or 8 times out of 10, even with Giannis out, and this figures not to be a high scoring game, I think he comes in under this number about 70 to 80% of the time. The under does have minus 117 juice, but I think it's worth paying. Let's bet 117 to win 100, under 27.5 points for Middleton tonight.
All right. Well, I got to say, full disclosure, the reason I only had a Paul Casey to win bet last week as an afternoon player is I forgot to check the odds on the golf last Wednesday night. By the time I woke up, the event was underway and I didn't see top 20 odds anymore. But for sure, I would have taken Bubba Watson. Now, Bubba was leading the event by 2 strokes with 5 holes to play, to win, okay? Mm. And it looked like I was about to retake the lead in that season-long golf pool that I keep swearing I won't mention again. But, all right, so he bogeys the 14th hole. Whatever, no problem. Bogey on 15. Okay, let's regroup. Bogey on 16. My hands are getting a little clammy, I got to say. Double bogey on 17 with a shankopotamus approach shot into the water. And I think I just threw up in my mouth. I couldn't watch the 18th hole, but that was another bogey. And Bumbling Bubba scored a 7-way tie for 19th. Talk about getting chopped to pieces on top 20. Hey, DraftKings, give those poor bastards their money back, okay? That's who deserves it. But had I remembered to play BetMGM, which I just noticed is not chop up the X-Place bets, I'd have been okay, right? He's top 20. Right. So with that in mind, I'm taking Jason Kokrak at the dreaded Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit this week. Classic's the right word, but at plus 125 for an unchoppable top 20 on BetMGM. But I go choppable top 20 on DraftKings with Webb Simpson at plus 125 because if he's not rusty, I think he falls all the way inside the top 20 and the line is better here than it would be with the unchopped part. And finally, I don't think I've ever taken a favorite before, and Bryson DeChambeau is only plus 750. But I'll try 20 units anyway on Bryson because he made mincemeat of this course winning last year. And now he has a full year of being what I call Bison.
And what were the bet amounts on Kokrak and Simpson for those top 20s?
Yeah, 50 on each.
Okay, got it. All right. My second bet is, like my first bet, a player prop, but it's on the NFL. It's a season-long futures bet. Shout out to our one-time guest, Adam Levitan, for bringing this one to my attention. T.Y. Hilton's receptions prop is strangely high. He'll turn 32 this season. He's clearly in decline. Still a good receiver, but nowhere close to a superstar receiver anymore. Last year, he played 15 games, had 56 catches. The previous year, battling injuries, he played 10 games, 45 catches. The year before that, much better, 14 games, 76 catches. And the year before that, 16 games, just 57 catches. Those are the last 4 seasons, averages of 13.75 games and 58.5 catches, and mostly trending downward. His line this year is 64.5 receptions. Now, I realize there are 17 games this season. However, his new quarterback, Carson Wentz, is a major question mark. Hilton is getting older and slowing down. He's had a series of leg injuries the last few years, a calf tear, quad strains. With all NFL players, the smart money is on them missing a couple of games. I actually found a site that I don't know what their math is based on, but they crunch a bunch of numbers and they predict 2.9 games missed for Hilton as an average. So that would mean an expectation that he plays 14 games. Even if he plays 17 games, I feel like 64.5 catches is on the high end. Now, my unfortunate Gronk bet last year aside, you will come out ahead in the long run betting NFL season long player prop unders. The bad news with this one is that people are onto this one and there's minus 165 juice now on the under. That's okay. I still think there's value. Let's risk 165 to win 100. T.Y. Hilton under 64.5 catches.
And 6 months from now, we'll find out how we did.
Exactly. That money's sitting in escrow for a little while.
Yeah, or I don't know. That might be a good 180-day leeway there, where we don't bet anything more than that. You know, we're not getting any younger after all. But, well, meanwhile, just because I can in New Jersey, let's go 100 on Joey Chestnut at minus 118 to eat 75 or more hot dogs in the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest on July 4th. That happens to be a max bet allowed here in New Jersey, and it's the only one listed by DraftKings. There's no under, there's no, you know, top woman, there's no any of this. But pro tip, DraftKings is offering an odds boost here to plus 125, though I'm not sure if we can do that in our picks segment, right?
Yeah, right. We tend to consider the odds boost cheating. Okay. for bankroll purposes, but still.
Okay, but fine. I want to add that if he gets to like 71.5 hot dogs, and there's an actual technical term in the contest, no kidding, called reversal of fortune. And if you don't know what that means, you could probably figure it out pretty quickly. If that happens at 71.5 dogs and he's disqualified, I'm looking for a refund. No, more than a refund. I'm looking to get paid out is what I'm looking for.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be mewling about it next week on the podcast if I don't get paid out when he reverses fortune after 71.5.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about incorporating bad beat refunds into the bankroll either. But let's just have some confidence in the bet that this one's going to win. He's going to go over 75 dogs. Or actually, what's it? It just has to get to 75, right? Is that the bet?
Yes.
For 74.5 dogs?
Yeah,
okay. Despite the fact that I now have an emotional investment and a sweat for our bankroll, I will not be watching.
Yeah, I can't do it. As I've stated before, you have to eat the hot dog with the bun. Like, why isn't there like a rogue outlet that does that instead? I would watch that one, even if it's not at Nathan's and it's not even Nathan's hot dog.
Right.
I would watch that. I want to see how many hot dogs people can actually eat.
Yeah.
You know, taking a bun and sticking it in water and you know, inhaling it without even chewing it, and then having a dog without it. It's just that's not. But you know what? If I got a shot to win here, I'm going to go for it.
It's the non-smoking casinos of the hot dog contest, and exactly. An alternative for the audience that wants something.
I'm always
different.
Looking for options, exactly.
Yeah. All right. That will do it for this episode of Gamble On. Thanks to everybody out there for listening, and thanks again to our guest, Assemblyman Ralph Caputo. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Raskin and John at Bergen Brennan, and follow US Bets at US_bets. Go to usbets.com for all the latest news and analysis from the world of gambling, and subscribe to this podcast on Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else. And with that, John, please take us out.
Well, you know, Eric, we both enjoyed Assemblyman Caputo's stories about being Mickey Mantle's Atlantic City casino handler, which is absolutely amazing. I'm going to close with a little more detail on that. You know, Mickey's twin brothers both were pit bosses in Las Vegas, and his mother was so fond of slot machines that, according to a 1983 Washington Post article, the family bought her a glove to protect her slots hand. That's diehard, big time. Mm. Now, when Mickey and Willie Mays were banned for the same reason, Yankees owner George Steinbrenner said at the time, "I think it's a crying shame that two great center fielders, two of the greatest in the history of the game, are both unable to have an active part in baseball because of casinos. Gambling is part of the way of life in this country. The states have made it legal in casino form." Well, Mickey and Willie were reinstated in 1985 by new commissioner Peter Ueberroth, who overturned predecessor Bowie Kuhn's ban. "The world changes," Ueberroth said at a news conference. "We're going to look for stronger, more clarified guidelines to keep gambling and baseball apart." I went through the files and I found there were people who owned baseball teams and casinos at the same time. Shocking, but true. Now Major League Baseball has all sorts of business deals with gaming operators, and that's barely 3 years after it lost an epic court battle to New Jersey thanks to the U.S. Supreme Court. I guess it's true what they say. If you live long enough. And with that, until next time, gamble on, everybody, and happy 4th of July.